Det er sommer. Den står på havefester, weekendture. Ja, selv gruppechatten er blevet enige om at mødes. Men du har garanteret svaret måske og og bø. Vær mere orange og få mere ud af sommeren. Lige nu er der udsalg på orange billetter til max 99, så du kan bare komme afsted. Du gider jo godt. Køb billetten i DSB-appen.
Nova, lyden af i dag.
So, Kelly Lee, welcome to Nova, and so nice of you to take time out to participate.
Thank you for having me, Mikael. You're doing okay?
I am very fine, thank you. We are out of lockdown and getting slowly back to normal in Denmark.
I'm jealous of Denmark. I'm jealous of you right now.
and you're still in lockdown in London?
Yeah, we're still in lockdown here. Eased very slightly, but no, it's still pretty serious over here. No proper shops open still, just like food shops and things. So,
right.
Yeah. Ask me what I did with my life. I spent it with you. If I lose my fame and fortune. So right, clap your hands, you're so right. Clap your hands, you're so right. As long as I got you, baby. Clap your hands, you're so right. Clap your hands, you're so right. Clap your hands, you're so right. As long as I got you.
So just to start off, how has this coronavirus and the following lockdown affected you?
I mean, it's been so strange because I'm a performer and, you know, most of my, I mean, I work in the studio lots as well, and I'm often traveling to writing camps and sessions and everything, but mainly it's the shows that I do, and obviously having all shows wiped out of the diary has been pretty scary, actually, and a bit strange. And I think for most of the music industry, it's been like, oh my God, because, you know, live performance is some of the biggest income of the industry, especially with the low income rate on streaming. Most performers rely on that to help fund things. So for myself, like with my own independent label, most of my shows that I do, I reinvest back into the label so I'm able to release my music. Mm-hmm. So having all of that sort of stopped and wiped out, it's like, it's been a bit scary. But then on the flip side, I've actually had an influx of sessions and studio stuff and actually people signing off records that I'd already written on and already sung and for release. And so that's been like an interesting side of things, is that people are like, okay, now let's look at the catalog that we have here, look at the stuff that we were planning on releasing, and like, actually let's get the paperwork done and stuff. So yeah, it's actually been very busy in terms of studio work, but other than that, yeah, it's strange. I miss it. I miss being out, and I love traveling. I love Europe so much. I've been to Denmark a few times. In fact, during the lockdown, I had a writing camp with GL Music, who are based in Denmark, and that was really cool. I've been to Copenhagen a couple of times, so yeah, I miss it.
But has the lockdown affected your creativity in any way? Do you write more songs now or less songs?
Definitely less. It's affected for sure. Like the first 2 weeks was the kind of panic and what's going to happen. And then we went into productive mode. I think a lot of the industry did. I for sure did. I sort of went into, right, that's it. I've got to write this song. I've got to get this recorded. I've got to get this out, you know. And I quickly sort of burn out. And then I've been doing a few Zoom sessions here and there and writing some stuff, but it doesn't feel the same to me. I mean, I've written a couple of songs in lockdown that I do really like, but generally it just doesn't feel the same as when you're in the room together and you're creating and you bounce off of the ideas. And also because if the Wi-Fi connection is a bit bad, which mine has been on occasion, you know, it's hard to try and back and forth if someone's trying to play an instrument and they're, you know, playing the guitar part about half a beat ahead of you and you try and sing it and then no one knows what's going on. So
exactly,
yeah, creativity has not been the best.
No,
I won't lie.
All right.
And then after a while, you start wondering what you can write about.
Yeah. It's only going to be sad songs about being alone.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. When will I be free?
Du lytter til Nova. So I'd love to hear a little about your journey with music. And when did you start to sing and make music?
I suppose my answer's a little bit cliche. I mean, I've been singing since I was a child. Right. It was my freedom of expression. It was the thing I was best at. I was good in school, but I'm not the best in terms of maths and stuff. I'm a real visual learner. Mm-hmm. So anything like music and arts and sports and that kind of thing, that was where I really excelled. And getting, like, being really hands-on, even like science projects where you have to do something, like, so I just found so much freedom in singing. I come from a low income background and family in South London. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of joy was come from, you know, listening to music and dancing and playing games and being really creative with my imagination. And I remember from like very early on, a friend of my mum's gave me a mixtape of Prince and New Power Generation.
Yeah.
And it had like Raspberry Beret, Diamonds and Pearls, Thieves in a Temple, Most Beautiful Girl in the World. Like, just my favorite, you know, that's the first time I ever heard Prince. And it just, I loved it. And Whitney, I'd listen to Whitney a lot, and I would, you know, I'd have a tape, and then I'd press stop on the tape machine and write down the lyrics, and then I'd play a little bit further and then pause it so I could write down the lyrics, and then I'd get all the way through the song, then go back to the start and sing back the lyrics that I've written out. And I'd do that for hours.
Yeah. Like, but no one in your family played music.
Yeah, they did. My mum was a singer and songwriter, mm-hmm. and an artist. My two uncles, one was a drummer in Paris. My other uncle went to the Royal College of Music, and he had an opera singing and classical musician. And then he was a singer on tour with people. I really looked up to him, my mm-hmm. uncle Mikey. And I just thought he was doing the best thing ever, and just always touring. And sometimes I saw him on TV. My mum said one of her memories of me when I was about three, my uncle Mikey was on TV and we were watching him, and I tried to climb into the TV to see him. So yeah, no, music's been very much in my family. So it's always been around me, and it's just been basically where my heart is and where I found the most joy in my life. So I couldn't think of doing anything else. The only other job I wanted to do was work in a post office when I was about four, because I had a post office set.
I think we all had that one. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You put the stamps and you put it through exactly. the postbox. You're like, this is awesome. And then after that, it was singing.
So when did it start to become serious? I read somewhere you have been working as a background vocalist for yes. a different artist.
Yes, I toured with Adele on her 21 tour. So we did Grammys, the Brits, the Oscars, and that was the Royal Albert Hall, Rolling in the Deep and Set Fire to the Rain. It was that tour. We could have had it I sung backing vocals for Leona Lewis, who's a friend of mine, and lots of other artists. And I did a lot of session work. I basically just found ways of being in music and paying my bills and earning a living through singing. And, you know, I sang function bands and weddings and all this kind of stuff. And yeah, there's sometimes a bit of taboo about saying that you've sung weddings or things like that. But that's been part of my like performance growth. I mean, like, I remember my first ever day having to do a function gig, turning up, not really knowing the band. And the first thing I got asked to sing was Respect by Aretha Franklin. And I hadn't even warmed up. Yeah. And I was like, oh my God. R-E-S-P-E-C-T, find out what it means to me. But then, you know, my voice learned so much doing that for years. Like, I, you know, on a set, you'd sing from Aretha Franklin to Chaka Khan to Kylie Minogue to a bit of Whitney to doing backing vocals for a Robbie Williams song or something. You know, you would be going through the spectrums of music genres and ended up getting the job as being Adele's backing vocalist.
Yeah.
And I did that tour, toured with Leona Lewis. And then when I was on tour with Jessie J, I actually ended up having a car crash and I couldn't walk. Someone pulled out in front of me and I was in a wheelchair for a bit. I had a severely prolapsed disc. It's not about the money, money, money. We don't need your money, money, money. We just want to make the world dance. Forget about the price tag. Ain't about the cha-ching, cha-ching. Ain't about the, yeah, bubbling, bubbling. Want to make the world dance. Forget about the price tag. Yeah, but then I actually got asked to sing I Got You for Duke Dumont Jax Jones. Mm-hmm. And the person I work with, who runs a company called Replay Heaven, he said, we need your voice. And I said, well, I can't walk at the moment. He said, doesn't matter. It has to be your voice. We'll make it comfortable so you can sit down. So I recorded that sitting down. Ask me what I did with my life. I spent it with you. If I lose my fame and fortune, really don't matter. As long as I got you, baby. Clap your hands, y'all, so right. Clap your hands, y'all, so right. As long as I got you, baby. Clap your hands, you're so right. Clap your hands, you're so right. Clap your hands, you're so right. And there's a live performance that we do of BBC Radio 1 Live Lounge where I'm sitting to do the performance. And the reason why I'm sitting is because I actually couldn't stand for longer than about 10 minutes at the time because I was still recovering from my disc injury. But I really believe that happened for a reason because I always wanted to be an artist. I've always been writing and doing stuff on my own thing when I could. But in terms of, you know, my financial situation of where I was growing up and having to pay my rent and all that kind of stuff, I was very good at being a backing singer. So I would, you know, say yes to the next job and say yes to the next job because I, you know, was fearful of not having enough income to, you know,
right,
just to pay my bills, basically. Yeah. And then, yeah, whilst I was injured and still recovering, the next year, so 2013 was my car crash. 2014 is when I Got You came out. I Wanna Feel, I was asked to sing as I was recovering as well, same situation. And then for some crazy reason, they both went to number one within a month of each other.
Yeah.
And that was the beginning of 2014. And then another track that I sang that year for Ferric, Dawn and Redondo, some Dutch artists, that was called Love Too Deep. That didn't have my name on it again. And that went top 40 and midweek top 40 in the UK, but was a really big club record. So suddenly my voice was just sort of everywhere, really, which was really exciting, but also very strange at the same time because my voice was everywhere, but my name wasn't. And I was still sort of recovering from this accident and sort of like working out
yeah
what I was going to do with myself.
So I need to ask you about the name thing. Mm. So I Got You was kind of a turning point and everyone knows that song, Duke Dumont and Jax Jones, but your name isn't on the cover.
Yes.
How come?
Well, that's because at the time, I mean, I didn't have any management or anything like that. Mm. And it was a session job, you know, as saying like you do, as many singers, they record vocals for records and stuff and just get paid a kind of flat fee. And a lot of times, you know, I didn't know. I didn't really know exactly what that meant. I mean, I've been doing session jobs for a bit, but some of those were for records and they were like replays, like what we did, and just some kind of little sample for a dance record or something. And I'd get paid, and the record never really did anything. They probably did something in like club world, but it's mm-hmm. not something I was really aware of. Or you do like some people do sessions for adverts, for example, or some people do sessions where, I mean, the way I got into sessions was I was paid by some songwriters to demo their songs for pitching. And that was my first ever bunch of sessions. And that was new to me in the world of obviously like songwriting and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, my name wasn't on the record. And then as everything blew up with I Got You and then it becoming Grammy nominated and everything and I Wanna Feel and stuff, I suddenly was like, oh, hold on a minute, this it's kind of strange, really, because my voice is everywhere, but my name isn't. And also I'm, you know, got to try and be the one representing myself here and going, oh, you know, well, what happens when, because I was suddenly inundated with requests to sing songs. And the person I was working with at the time said, like, why do you need to be an artist? Why can't you just get paid to sing other people's songs? You could make an all right living out of it. And I had to have a turning point and say, because I don't want my voice just used for other people's songs and never getting the credit for myself. My dream was to be in music and this wasn't my dream.
No.
And that was hard because I was sort of breaking rank and I was doing something that was like a lot of people haven't really done before, or so I think maybe some people have, but you know, they haven't got support and I didn't get support really. It was kind of annoying. Like, why am I speaking? Why am I saying that's my voice? Why am I now saying if I'm going to sing some other records, my name has to be on it? Like, and I was doing a lot of learning and realizing what that meant for me in terms of you know, my profile and my own respect. As other people come to approach me to sing songs, you know, they don't want to give me a certain credit, or they don't want to give me a certain fee, or they don't want to give me certain points on the record, because my name wasn't on the other one. So I'm irrelevant. Like, I actually had some people say that I was irrelevant when I was trying to put my name on some records, a record in particular that I'd actually written or co-written and sung. Yeah. And they would like, don't need your name on it because you're not relevant. And that was really painful. And I was like, well, when do I become relevant then? And when do I get the respect for what I've done? Sounds. What is cold? The thorn makes me shiver. I feel it burning. I can drown in this river. Cause I don't. Survive when I'm here alone. Feels like I'm dying without. Feels like I'm dying without. Feels like I'm dying without you. Oh, oh. I'm not claiming to be a producer. I'm not a producer. I co-produce my own records. I know exactly what I want to hear in the sound. I produce my own vocals on Logic. I really enjoy doing that. But in terms of being a music producer, you know, that's a really incredible skill. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, a lot of producers aren't singers. So I don't understand why a producer can't be credited equally as a singer being credited, and why that can't be such a great unity. Like, we're all making music. Like, you know, a producer needs a mixing engineer or a master engineer to, you know, all these people and the musicians that play the instruments on the record. It's like we're all doing something to create music, which, you know, people feel in the world and consume and whatever. So why does it have to be such a difficult situation to be appreciated for the element that you bring to a song?
Is this normal in the music business?
Honestly, it has been a normality, yes.
Right.
And that's been very frustrating. I remember my first ADE, ADE is Amsterdam Dance Music Event, which is one of the biggest dance music events in our business. And my first one, I think I've been to ADE four or five times. My first one, I could not believe the lack of representation for vocalists. And the amount of records, you know, unless we're talking about some deep underground tech house or something, or, you know, something which is really like minimal techno or whatever, where there's pretty much no vocals and it's just predominantly music, unless there's like one spoken word or something, a little small hook. You know, dance music has vocals all over it. And a lot of careers of big DJs and producers are because they've had a smash hit record with a vocal attached to it that everybody can put their hands up in the air and sing along to. Which is awesome. But then why are those singers not credited properly? Or why are there not more live PAs? Or why are those singers of the records that everybody's singing along to not getting as much respect? You know, some producers build tracks around the a cappella that they got from a singer or from an old sample, you know, like Martha Wash or someone like, you know, Jocelyn Brown, somebody else's guy, you know. All these vocalists, and you know, I started to look at that and I was so confused. And I remember saying it to a friend of mine, because he was performing out there, and I said, why don't I just do a live PA of the record? I'm going to be out in Amsterdam as well. And he was like, okay, we don't really do that in Amsterdam as much. I haven't really thought about that, but then okay, I suppose so. And he was happy with me doing it. He was like, this is cool. But then we had such an issue with the organisers, and I got asked, you know, the event was in some kind of swimming pool thing, and would I sing optimally? Do I know how to perform live? And all these kind of strange questions. Yeah. you know, questioning my professionalism. And it was starting to, like, something, it was starting to dawn on me. And then I was coming across other, obviously, singers that have sung on record, big records, and, you know, them saying the same things and saying they've not been credited properly, or someone's used their vocals without permission and they've had to fight to get permission. And, you know, some of my friends that I've got really close have, you know, had a big hit and been so disrespected that they felt broken afterwards and just had to have a break from music for a bit and then come back in and try and find their own terms. And I just sort of been going, why is it like this, and why does it have to be like this? Because it doesn't, in my opinion. Du lytter til Nova.
But is this related to the genre of music, or is this related to women in music, or is this related to black women in music?
I think it's an excellent question. I think it's very, very prevalent in the dance music genre, because the DJ is the one that is respected and gets, you know, the accolades for playing the record. Mm-hmm. And I've got loads of DJs who I'm very close to, great, amazing friends and stuff. And, you know, I love DJs. This is not a DJ bashing thing. But yes, in dance music, we've got predominantly white male DJs and, you know, a lot of use of soul black singers' voices on records. But they're not the representation of those black singers or soul singers in the industry as well. And, you know, that's it's if it's a one off, it's like, okay, or if it's a couple of times, or it's a coincidence. But when that is over the industry and you've got many people feeling like, or, you know, the fact that you've contacted me to speak yeah. about this with your journey of listening to music, mm-hmm. you know, you start going, well, that this isn't just a coincidence. Actually, there is an issue here and it's not being addressed because, you know, not enough people are speaking out. And with me speaking out, I've had a lot of really lovely supportive things, but I have had backlash of people saying that I'm playing the race card and, you know, I'm just trying to get attention for myself and this kind of thing. And that's really draining, because honestly, the only attention I've ever wanted is for my musicality and for my work and for my voice. My voice has been streamed over 500 million times on the records that I've sung. And, you know, my first thought isn't, oh, is it because I'm a woman, or is it because it's if there's systematic racism or whatever? My first thought was, oh, okay, maybe I need another hit, or maybe I need to work harder, or maybe, you know, maybe I need another record and another record. And then, you know, suddenly 3 top tens later, 1 Grammy nominated, Billboard Dance Chart 1-2, all the dance record that I've sung on and featured on, you know, I've done records for Spinning, I've done records for Armada, I've done records for record for Warner Now, I've done, you know, records for multiple independent labels, Defected. There's all these labels that I've sung on and sung records for and have done something. So then I get to the point where it's like, well, how many more songs do I need to sing then so that I get fair representation?
Exactly. And I'm sure, just to back up your point, that if I go through my old 12-inch records from the 80s and 90s, I can find a lot of house records sampling Jocelyn Brown's voice mm. without her being credited on yes. the cover. So this has been going on for decades.
And sometimes those artists don't even know that their voice has been used until they've heard it mm-hmm. huge somewhere. And
yeah.
And to be honest, that's a, you know, that's a crime. That's wrong. You shouldn't be using, like, you can't use a musician's work without their credit and or their knowledge and making that right. Why, you know, and singers, and I know musicians that have been screwed over and whatever. It's like there's a messy thing here. It's like, why are people disrespecting the place that they've taken music from to create something that they're going to use and profit off of? That is the issue. It's like, if everything's above board and discussed, then fine. And also, like, a singer might not want to be credited. It's not like going, you have to credit us on every single thing. Sometimes, you know, it might not be the right record. I've written some. Now I'm actually more in control of what I'm doing because I've been through this situation and I've had to say, no, you're not having my vocal there. Or no, you have to credit me. Or, okay, that's like, I've written this for you. It doesn't suit my sound and this is for you. So, you know, I don't need my credit on this record. And it's like, okay, that's great. And then we do the contract and then that's all fair term, you know, and that's something that's agreed and is professional. It's basically yeah. being professional. It's tiring when people try to not be professional. I mean, there's a song I wrote and I sang not too long ago, and I found out it was coming out by seeing it on the artist's Instagram, and they hadn't even tagged me. They hadn't even got permission, but they did tag the other artist that I'd sung records for, and they put singer of Duke Dumont's I Got You and singer of Second City at Second City's I Wanna Feel. And I was like, and they didn't even tag me or didn't even ask my permission. Wow. And I was furious. I was like, I wrote that top line. That top line is 100% mine. I wrote that top line and I recorded it. And as far as I were, I wasn't even sure the record was finished. I thought it was still in the demo stages. So this is all news to me. And that was one of the first like times I had to really, really put my foot down and get serious and maybe get, you know, labeled like I was being angry. And I did get backlash from them at the beginning, and then they finally understood it and apologized. But that was when I had to get my lawyer involved. And my lawyer, who's very well respected in the industry, he basically was just like, why are you using my client's vocals and songwriting without her permission?
Yeah.
Put her name on it now and let's sort this out before it comes out. And that made me feel really sad and really tired, because I was like, they loved the record. They loved me when I wrote it. They loved having me there when I was in the studio recording it. So why was there this level of disrespect when I wasn't with them anymore, that they didn't want to even mention my involvement?
Exactly. Yeah. Why not give the credit?
Yeah. Yeah. Why not? I just want to ask that question. Why? And I think that would be what's really interesting is, and now we're discussing this, I would really love to find out why. What is the thought process behind it?
Yeah.
Is it because someone just thought, oh, I didn't, you know, when it comes to the producer and the record labels, what are they saying? Oh, we didn't think about it, or you weren't the right look for the brand, or you weren't the right name, you know, what is it? I'd love to understand, because I'm not the only case here. I'm one of many, and it's tiring. It's tiring to fight for your own respect. And I think that's where, when Funk Butcher, who did the original tweet on Twitter, and I saw it, and it was the day after Blackout Tuesday, the music industry had, which for me was really surprising and quite powerful, that the whole industry were coming together to sort of say something. And it was when I saw his tweet the next morning, and I was feeling a bit more gathered together, because it's been very emotional time with everything that's going on with America and George Floyd's murder, and you know, it's been very heavy, a lot of emotions. And I saw his tweet and I just sort of said, you know what, this is my story, and I didn't expect to have the reaction it did, and I'm thankful that it had the reaction, in terms of that other people are saying, you know, they felt the same, and that, you know, they're so glad I spoke up and all this kind of stuff. And also, it's been very scary to receive the backlash of people who aren't listening. It's not an angry finger pointing thing. It's a why.
Yeah.
And ultimately, I just wanted my own fair opportunity, and it's felt like I haven't had the same fair opportunity that my counterparts have had, you know.
And these are things you've been thinking about for the last couple of years.
Yeah, but I think, but again, like, it's some of the stuff is so subtle and it's so small. You think sometimes it doesn't even register. You're just like, oh, I'm not sure if that, you know, whatever. You just think, okay, cool. I just need to be bigger, or I need more Instagram followers.
Yeah.
Or I need to look cooler, or my fashion wasn't correct, or I don't know. You go through all these things, and then more and more it chips away, and you know, and then you find, you know, counsel in other people that have experienced what you've experienced, other singers. And, you know, for me, let's just talk about not even the music industry or, you know, being a woman or any of that stuff, just racism. I have experienced racism my whole entire life. Since, you know, I was very young, I'm mixed race. I grew up in London, which is pretty multicultural, but still there's a lot of ignorant things that have been said to me. And you sort of grow and learn to shake your head and call some things out if they're really bad, or if they're just ignorant or just silly. You just, you know, go, well, okay, whatever. And you sort of just keep moving and you keep adapting, and it just chips away at you your whole life. You're sort of made to feel like an other. And you know, in this situation we're talking about black people, but that might be any other ethnicity, or if you're gay, or if you're trans, or you know, all these kind of things that society, you'd think that hopefully we've evolved to a point that people can understand each other's and respect each other's differences and speak openly. And yeah. it's not. And what we're seeing going on in the world right now, it becomes exhausting. And, you know, I've spoken to so many friends and from different heritages, mm-hmm. and even being in the UK, people who are not white, I don't know a single one who hasn't had some kind of racist experience. And I think people are starting to be more open and honest and say their experience. And then when you start reading all of them, you know, Leona Lewis posted a really passionate Instagram post this morning about a situation that happened with her and her dad in a shop in Chelsea in London.
This is the reality of what's happening. And you know, it's sometimes, for me, that's why I my refuge is music. And I'm a singer, I'm a musician, and that's my refuge, always. And sometimes I feel like maybe I can't articulate myself properly when I'm just talking. But obviously in this circumstance, I have to speak about it. And I hope it's coming across how I need it to come across. Because I'm just in pain, and I'm tired, and I'm sick of it. And you know, I'm someone who's mixed race. My mum is white, my dad is black. And I had a beautiful representation of what that unity meant for me. Because when that comes together in the most loving way, it is the most beautiful thing. Equal and beautiful. But that's not the reality of what's going on. Yeah, so I just wanted to share that.
And yeah, and it's just, it's so sad to keep hearing these stories when it's like, come on, please, people, like, educate yourselves, learn history, so that we can really evolve to be a better species and a better society. That's beyond music completely. Sorry, that's just like the world, but yeah.
I know, but it seems like, and I'm just carefully saying, it seems like things are opening a bit up now, and things yeah. are changing a bit, and more people are stepping up.
Yes, I think maybe it's because of this lockdown. I discussed it with my partner, mm-hmm. You know, several times, because we were trying to work out why has this time been such a massive thing. And my partner is white, and he knows a lot about history, and he's been quite surprised himself that certain people haven't really realized what's gone on in history. He's a musician himself and a producer, and we've discussed it at length. And just maybe because of the lockdown situation, that the world has been shifted with this pandemic, yeah. you know, in our lifetime, we haven't really seen this on a global scale, that everybody's, you know, inside together, life has stopped, and people are able to sort of see for a minute and pause. Because what happened with George Floyd, there's been so many murders of black people in America, and we see it, and then people are like, oh, this is outrageous. And then you kind of say something, and then you scroll on, and then you run to your next session or your job or your, you know, whatever is going on with life. And that hasn't been the case now. We're all stuck to actually think about what's going on with ourselves, with our families, with our home, with the world. So yeah, I'm really thankful that people are finally talking now and discussing stuff and being so open about it. And it is scary. And me personally, I've had some white friends message me saying they, you know, they want to learn more and understand more and be educated on, you know, what's happening and how they can make a difference. And that means a lot, because when you sort of live with something for so long, sometimes, you know, you don't even know how to bring it up again or say, you know. So the fact that that is happening, and the fact that you've asked me on your show because you've realised from what you've seen and from the house music that you've listened to, that's just really powerful. And that does open dialogue for change. And we're all constantly learning. You know, I've been learning about what's even going on in America. Like Ava DuVernay's, the director, her four episode, I don't want to say show because it's not show, sort of film on Netflix, When They See Us. I watched that with my partner because I really wanted to understand. And I was so shocked about the deep-rooted racism in America. I knew of stuff, but I didn't really know how deep it went. And my eyes were opened and shocked to more things I didn't know about. So I think it's just constant learning and education, and don't be afraid to ask. Because I think some people are also scared of like saying the wrong thing or whatever. That's, you can never do wrong by asking, because you want to better yourself and better life for everybody else. Like, one of my best friends is gay, and I'm a massive advocate and ally of the LGBTQ plus movement. And I ask him sometimes, I'm like, you know, he gave me the recent updated Pride flag, which includes trans and Black Lives Matter and, you know, non-binary people. And I've got to be educated with him and that movement to know where I can help and I can make the right call and the right decision and use my voice in the right way. And that's all what it is. It's just, you know, hopefully looking out for each other to be better human beings.
Yeah. Just to get, this is all so interesting and we could use, I guess, hours or days discussing this. That's
sorry.
Okay. I just want to talk to you about, because you had 500 million streams plus with your vocal on it.
Yes.
Songs that you've been attached to in some form or way. But instead of getting a record deal with Universal or with Sony or with Warner Music, the three big ones, you made your own music label called Music Core.
Yeah.
Can you tell me why?
Yeah, sure. after I'd sung More Than Friends for James Hype, which was top 10 in the UK and had my name on it this time, it's James Hype featuring myself. It was so exciting because I thought, you know, this is my third top 10 record now, first one with my name on it. Again, being inundated with requests from labels and major labels to sing songs for other DJ producers. And I thought, surely, like, I did some massive shows out there. We did some like arena performances, and no one was asking me about my music or anything.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I basically set up my record label in 2018, and my first single was called Do You Want to Be Loved Like This, which actually James Hype produced. And that was really cool of him. He was one of the first producers to go to me, "You sang me a smash hit record, let's write something for you. Let's get in the studio and write something for you." I was just like, what a cool guy.
Yeah.
I really appreciate that.
Then he says, "Oh, do you want to be loved like this? Oh, do you want to be loved like this? Dear, 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 do you want to be loved like this? Oh, do you want to be loved like this?"
I funded it all myself. The way I've been funding my record label is to use the royalties from the records that I've sang, and then the live shows that I do performing the records that I've sang and my own ones that I've got out. I basically reinvest back into my label so I can release my music, because I just thought, look, no one's seeing me as an artist, so I see me as an artist, so I'm gonna have to back myself.
Yep.
And that's what I did. And Do You Want to Be Loved Like This ended up actually doing really well in Dubai in the UAE. Friend of mine, Chris Fade, is a big radio presenter out there, and they had a big festival up there called Red Fest Festival with Virgin Radio, and he got me on that stage. He was like, I know how incredible you perform, our More Than Friends is a big hit here, here's a platform, use it. He went out of his way to back me, and I couldn't believe how well it reacted. The first single, Do You Want to Be Loved Like This, went top 10 in Shazam in the UAE. The Red Fest performance went incredibly well, performed to 13,000 people, an influx of fan base. I ended up supporting Fifth Harmony, one of their last few shows before they broke up, in Abu Dhabi. So suddenly I had all this stuff happening, but because it's like me on my own, I really wish I'd had a record label at that time to capitalize on that moment, you know, because we right. could have done something so awesome then, you know. So yeah, anyway, I set up my label basically as a platform to give myself an opportunity so I could be heard. Yeah, and I've learned so much about the music industry, the business side of things, how to put together a release, the contractual side of things, the artwork, the lead time you need on a record, when you put it out, where are the best avenues to push it. And I'm proud of that because, you know, growing up, I was just like, oh, I hope someone signs me one day.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. And now I know that it's hard work, but I am growing my own fan base and people do really love my music. And that's really important to me because I found my voice and my sound, and I continue to evolve with it. Like, I've got my next release scheduled. It's coming out end of June. The visuals are up a level for me. I edited the video. And like, I'm really excited. This makes me really excited. It's great, that I managed to learn all this and I managed to facilitate giving myself an opportunity in a way. But I also know there's going to be a certain point where unless I can get a certain level of backing or unless my song does really well independently, you know, will I be able to continue to financially afford it unless I sing another hit record or something? So those are the thoughts I have in my brain.
Right.
Constantly.
So if Universal calls you up, you wouldn't say no, just like that.
I think it would have to depend on the deal terms, basically. Right. I've learned so much now. I mean, yes, I'd love to be supported by a major record label. That would be so awesome to have that backing and support and funding to have, you know, my voice heard. I'd love that. But I think I've learned so much now and I've had to do so much groundwork myself. Then yes, if a major label was to call me up now, I'd be like, well, great, let's chat about how we can make this excellent and how we can continue on from what I've started, because that's, you know, I've found my voice now, so I want to make sure that I can continue to use it.
If you were to pick one of your own songs to play on the radio, what's your favourite?
I'd love you to play Cotton Clouds. I absolutely love that record. I wrote it in a writing camp at ADE a couple of years ago with Christine Bogan and Yoda Francesco, who's an amazing producer. And I just absolutely love that song. It's about that feeling when you're sort of just like in the early stages with someone and you just don't want to get out of bed and you don't want that person to go to work or whatever. And it's just really sweet and gorgeous. And I call my sound anthemic pop, and I've sort of been developing that through the releases. And this year was the year I really took a decision. I was like, I'm going to release my singles every 6 to 8 weeks if I can, or have a constant narrative as to who I am as an artist. And Cotton Clouds for me just was the best way I could have started my year. And I'm doing that all by myself on my label. So I just felt really proud of that record. And I felt that was a way of going, here's some of me, listen to my voice, listen to my lyrics. And
Yeah.
Hope you like it.
It's a beautiful song. I love it.
Oh, thank you so much.
Kelly Lee, thank you so much. And I'm so sorry for taking up most of your Sunday.
No, thank you, Mikkel. Thank you for having me. Thank you for wanting to talk about this and picking up my story. And, you know, you're creating change. And that's really powerful. So thank you so much for having me. Just lay me down, thinking of a coffee and a cigarette. I like the way it sounds, when you're breathing on my neck, hearing you confess how you're high on me, watching you get dressed as I lie here in our mess, and I can't leave. Let's lose ourselves in a lit shit world, cause I need a little longer with you. Just think we found in a cocktail clouds, got me shaking, think it's too good to know. I'm in love with you. We don't gotta talk about what's coming next, no. So won't you keep it down mm-hmm. Way up here ain't nothing needs to be said. I don't wanna hit the ground, cause when you're breathing on my neck,
det er sommer. Den står på havefester, weekendture. Ja, selv gruppechatten er blevet enige om at mødes. Men du har garanteret svaret måske og og bøge. Vær mere orange og få mere ud af sommeren. Lige nu er der udsalg på orange billetter til max 99, så du kan bare komme afsted. Du gider jo godt. Køb billetten i DSB-appen.